educator, Dr. Charles Marshall.
This sound was recorded on the 3rd of November, 1964, medium Leslie Flint.
There again, for these particular a statue and all that, it means little nothing. Only that these people, quite in their own fashion, content and happy, unprogressive they are, and their leader, in many senses, is a good person, but not an advanced person. Mm. And there again, these people are quite content to be, I was going to use the term domination, under domination of man, but it isn't even true to that, because they are free, in a sense. What is wrong, of course, is that their minds, to some extent, are not free, because they can only think in a certain way. They haven't yet realized the great possibilities within themselves, and then, of course, is the secret of all life, as far as human people are concerned. That, as indeed all the great religions teach, that illumination of the mind and the soul is from within. You may be talked to, you may read books, you may study philosophy, you may study teachings, you may study this or that particular belief or religion or creed or whatever it is, but it still depends on the individual as to how they accept and how they apply it. Yes. For instance, there are millions of people who glibly call themselves Catholics or Protestants or Buddhists or whatever they may be, who really, quite frankly, just accept it without really delving deep into it and without doing very much about it or applying it in the true sense. In other words, it's what you are within your inner soul and how you yourself react and respond to those realizations and emotions which should and often can and do, if the person allows, affect them to a certain extent that they are a changed person. The whole point is this: we are as we are, no more and no less. And so when we arrive over here, it isn't our particular religion or our particular creed that matters so much. It's what we ourselves have become by our thoughts and our actions. And therefore, of course, you will find over here varying states and degrees of being according to the individual. And what would be heaven to one person could quite easily to another be, not exactly a hell, but could certainly be a place in which they feel uncomfortable, so easily. So everything here is law and order. Everything here is organized in a sense so much so that one isn't even aware of the organization, because it is an organization of free will, and it is a matter of understanding. And the person will only understand so much according to the light. And so what would be an unhappy state of some would be necessarily, for the time in which they dwell there, a happy position.
Mm. And why it was he taken down, or
there? Well, I think the whole point is that it was an experience, and possibly one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, and possibly with the realization that later on he may feel the need or the desire perhaps to go there himself,
yes,
to see if he can help in some way. Because you see, with a person like Ward, with his feelings, we have an exceptionally interesting personality and character. A very vital, very alive person, a person who by his very nature is good,
yes,
inasmuch that he thinks no ill and bears no grudge,
yes,
no matter what life may have done to him or how hard it may have treated him, he feels a great deal of affection and regard and love for humanity, and he is the sort of person who is easy and free in his manner and his speech, and he gives forth from himself a great deal of intelligence and understanding.
Yes.
It's not the namby-pamby sort of thing, the wishy-washy sort of stuff that you often get from people. It's a genuine thing. And he feels that he wants to know all he can know. I mean, he's the sort of person who delves, wants to peek behind the curtain before the show is ready,
yes,
that sort of person, you see.
Yes.
Which, of course, doesn't always work out, which wouldn't always best do, but the point is that he is studying this huge aspect of experience, and that if he sees the opportunity, or he has an inkling of something of interest going on,
yes,
for instance, he'll say to me sometime or other, he'll say, now, what are you going to do? Or, where are you going? And I know the back of his mind, he thinks to himself, but he's getting somewhere interesting, or he's going to do something different. don't know what he's up to. I wonder if he could take me. That's a sort of mental attitude.
Oh, lovely.
And sometimes, if I have found an opportunity to take him, or it's impossible, this is just one of many experiences that no doubt he himself will relate in his own way, in his own time. Of course, he's tremendously curious.
Yes.
He's much more curious than a monkey. I mean, you stay in front of a cage and watch monkeys, they're much more interested in you than you are in them. That's the odd thing about the zoo, as a matter of fact. People don't stare at these poor little creatures stuck behind bars. And if they did but know it, to the monkey, the person on the other side is much more amusing, much more odd and weird than the monkeys himself. And he's like this, you know, he's got the curiosity of a monkey, and he's not just content with enough. He wants to know everything about everything. And I find him a very enlightening person to be with, a very amusing and interesting companion. And frankly, I'm only too happy to be of any help and assistance and to take him anywhere I can. But of course, as I've said to him, it's certainly true, to some extent, in certain experiences, it's better to go slowly than to try and go too fast. Mm-hmm. Because he is assimilating an extraordinary amount of knowledge in an extremely short time. More, as a matter of fact, of the many, many people that I've known that have come over here, I've never known any individual who's been capable of so much experience and being able to adapt it and make good use of it in such a short time as he has.
And
he
explained.
Oh, no, when you consider this, though, that I have seen people over here who've been over here not just 2 or 3 months or years, but in some instances even hundreds of years.
Yes.
And they're nowhere near as progressed as he is.
Yes, I can tell that.
That's the most fantastic thing. When you think about it, the time, in a sense, is nothing to us, of course. And that when a person, perhaps, has been over here for 200 years, you'd expect them to have risen to a very high state of being, but not necessarily so. I know people now who still live in a world of their own imagining and their own illusion, in which they are perfectly content and happy. They have no particular desire for any further knowledge or further experience. They cling together in their own community, and they live out a kind of life which, to say the least of it, is antediluvian and antiquated. They live and think in the old-fashioned way which they did perhaps 20 years ago. Yes. They know that they are in a different state of being, but they're content to recreate, and this is an important thing, they're content to recreate around and about them, a replica, as near as they possibly can, and really is highly accurate, of the very condition of life which they were accustomed to in their own time.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extraordinary thing, but it is there.
Why is it that you have
so quickly
in assimilating everything?
Well, of course, one thing I think.
Well,
there are various very good reasons, Rose, and I think this is something which may give comfort to some people on your side, should they hear my words, that there is a natural law which compensates, and also, inasmuch as it compensates, can also be a form of retribution. In other words, if a person in your world has a very difficult, hard, unhappy life, if they've been made to suffer unnecessarily through no fault of their own, if society or the condition of life in which they've existed has been unduly unjust, then in this world there is great justice. Indeed, in your world there is great injustice. In this world there is complete and absolute honest justice. And a person who obviously has had an unhappy time in your world and has suffered greatly through no fault of their own, they will reap the reward in this world of being free of all their anxieties, worries, sickness, whatever it may be. They will find that there is a compensation. I'm not suggesting by this, exactly, I wouldn't like this to be misunderstood, that just because a person has had a bad life in your life on earth, that they will necessarily justify always altogether a happier existence here. But what I am trying to say is this, that by the very laws of nature, the very laws of life, that when life has been unduly unjust, through no fault of the individual, there is a reason quite often that they've had this said and said, it may be in some instances, not all, that they themselves, through some faults of their own nature in past time, or faults in their lives which they did nothing to do about it, did nothing to eradicate, and that they choose, for instance, in all cases, and in some instances, choose to return, and that they might wipe out, by experience of an unhappy nature, past misdeeds and mistakes. In other words, they work out their salvation, if you like to think of it like that,
yes,
by a second or third incarnation. This doesn't always apply, but it is the case in point with some people. Life, you see, life is always, though one doesn't always realize it, or should I say that the laws of life, or the laws of nature, or the laws of God, whichever way you like to apply it, or put it, or whichever term you like to use, are always, although they may not seem at the time, just. And Stevens, of course, is an old soul. He's had many experiences. He's an individual who has gone through a great deal of experience in more lives than one. And I can think that it was probably very necessary. Not perhaps for Stevens, for another, this is a very interesting point. Not possibly for him. Edification, or for his good, in a sense, that he suffered in the way in which he did. It may be that a person sometimes, either willingly or unconsciously, is made to be sacrificed. You see, people in your world often only think deeply or are affected when something happens which causes them great concern. They see injustice, or they see something happen that creates a sort of feeling that they, or something ought to be done about it. It's too late for that person, but it's not too late for others that may yet come. In other words, to bring about change. You can see it also with people who stood out in some shape or form, who've given themselves, either willingly or in some cases unconsciously, for the good of others. Every great teacher, every consequence, every great prophet, every great savior or messiah or leader of any great religious truth, real truth, invariably they have suffered. I'm not comparing, of course, as Stephen with Christ, but what I'm trying to say is this, that the one who's rejected, the one who's despised, the one who's made to suffer, quite often for the faults of others, just as much as their own, if it comes to them, possibly more so. Those individuals, often, by their very suffering, by their very giving themselves, help humanity, help others. You see, Stephen Ward, in life's limit, was a man who, as the world sees it, was very human, very natural, very normal, and perhaps rather unwise and rather foolish, but he awakened a great deal of interest. That's really very mildly, but what is interesting is that he awakened the sense of justice in people. And I felt, well, here was a man and he'd been made a scapegoat. Here was a man who had been used as a tool, who'd been made to take the wrath of many of the faults of others in high places who were able to buy themselves out of it, or protect themselves by their name, or title, or position, or whatever it was. In other words, being sacrificed, in a sense, on the altar of the establishment.
Yes.
And quite frankly, I think that he did a tremendous amount of good. People may not see it from that point of view. Some people do not see the good. But actually, he has brought into the conscious minds of untold numbers of people a sense that injustice is done, and that it shouldn't happen again. And I think that you will find that a lot of things that have got by in the past, where the establishment is concerned, where certain individuals have been quietly covered up and allowed to get scot-free, often, even though they've made dreadful rumours and have probably committed themselves to worse than anything Stephen ever did, the point is that it's about public consciousness. And it is trying to see that everyone's life is not in a sense their own. It is one's own, of course. But if you are brought into a world, into a community, we must become part of it. Although we like to say to ourselves that we are individuals, which of course we are, does not alter the fact that we are part of the community. We are part of the brotherhood of man. We are all responsible to some extent for the other. We can't just walk by on the other side. We've all got to learn to be good Samaritans. We've all got to learn to appreciate the fact that there are others that are lagging behind on the road of life. There are others that are too weak to go ahead and they sit by the wayside. That we cannot, in our desires to forge ahead, just forge ahead and neglect them. The only way that we can ever hope to forge ahead is to stop on the way and to help the lesser and the more unhappy person.
Yes.
To give them a leg up, to help them, to comfort them.
Yes.
And that is to me, as I see it, because I feel that these people who, as the world terms it, make tremendous progress and become, as the world sees it, successful, are in often, many instances, the least successful of all of us. The people often who make known what appears to be great success in life, the people perhaps who live in obscurity, whose life is a struggle, where they have great temptation and sometimes fail because of the very circumstances under which they live. These are the people whose help, whose need the most help. These are the people who, because of the very conditions of their life and circumstances, are the very people who, in a sense, are the ones who are suffering and are in consequence of need. What we must do is we must strive to help each other. We must strive to help the less fortunate. And of course, let me explain the idea that being less fortunate doesn't necessarily mean to say in your world the person who is financially embarrassed or perhaps is in a position that they can't do this or can't do that. Often those people, in some senses, are better off than the person who has spent it.
Yes.
Because one mustn't see the other side of the picture too.
Yes.
In other words, in a sense, often the responsibilities of people who have money is greater, and in some senses it's a downside worse, because they don't know where they are, they don't know how to enjoy their life, because all the time their worries and their fear of their money or the stock exchange and what have you, and then again often that's a barrier to their spiritual progress, because the only way I can assure you that one can hope to progress spiritually is through suffering in some shape or form. And it seems to me that the way of suffering often is the way of salvation, is the way of progress. Unless we've had setbacks, unless we've had disappointments, unless we've had heartache, these things in a sense have nothing to do with money. These things are to do with the human individual. These are the things that are common to all humanity, whatever their position in life may be, whether they are in an affluent position or in poverty-stricken circumstances. All humanity is undergoing conditions of life which are always, sometime or other, causing great concern. And often, sometimes people are failing themselves, and failing their friends, and failing their loved ones. And the point is this, that the person who has found the true path, who realizes the significance of what life really is and what it's all about, and when a person understands the truth of survival, that the earth life, after all, is in a sense but a passing thing, but a necessary thing, and an exceptionally interesting thing. Once people realize that it is, in a sense, the schoolroom, and then they learn their lessons, and they rejoice, even if sometimes they don't reach or appear to reach the top of the class. If there are no prizes given, it isn't that that matters. It isn't the one who receives the prizes. It isn't the one who reaches the top of the class. Indeed, quite often the person who might be considered in a sense the dunce, quite often is the one who has the most heart. And because he has the most heart, he's the most successful material. What is important is who is successful in a spiritual sense, and in the sense of being a real person. That is the point of living, to learn how to be a real person, not a synthetic person, not a person who's all facade and no gift. There are so many in your world, and poor Stephen, his whole life, unfortunately, more or less, you might say, was built up with people in and out and around and about him who were synthetic, who were on the surface, no depth, no integrity, no sincerity, and when he needed their help, they all failed him. Every one of them fled either out of the country, they could get out because they're in a position to get out, or they tried to hide in some shape or form, or indeed in some cases, they even paid to keep their names out of the papers. I can tell you that Stephen was made the speaker of society, of a certain class of society, of people who hadn't the guts, who hadn't the courage, who hadn't the stamina, they hadn't got the personality nor the character to stand by them.
Yeah.
And in consequence, out of the whole affair, the only one who really came out well was Stephen. And that's one of the reasons why he's in the happy state of being in which he is, why he's so alive, vitally, mentally alive, so enthusiastically interested in every aspect of life that he encountered here or experienced. He is instead, in many, many ways, a remarkable young man.
Okay.
And I want you, and I'm sure you do know this, but I want everyone else to know it. So anyone who you can get to come and listen to what I'm saying, you need to get into listening to the world. Because, you know, a lot of people have such stupid ideas in your world. As soon as the man is down, they want to put their foot on him.
Yes.
And if he happens, or someone happens to crash with their own idea of morality, even though they've got none themselves on the quiet, but still, what they like to appear on the surface, then of course they're only too happy to run the person down, to cover up themselves quite often. But
oh.
You know, it's an extraordinary thing how the very people who persecuted Stephen most were far worse than Stephen even knew how to be.
Oh, I'm sure of that.
Because he himself, because he had both, but he himself was a perfectly honest, straightforward person with no guile.
Oh.
What he did was quite openly and quite within, as he thought, the law, because he didn't even conceive that what he was doing or was wrong. After all, he didn't organize this vice racket. There's no such thing as a vice racket going on in South Sudan. He happened to know a few loose women, but he knew only hardly any well-known personality in a high place he doesn't know or hadn't known or hasn't had an affair with his
lost.
Yeah.
It's
all
very
stupid. It just happened that it was a very well-known personality in a very high place who allowed himself to get into a bit of a scrape and hadn't got the courage to gently bow himself out to keep it quiet. If the man had been straightforward and honest, he would have kept his good name. I'm talking about the other man, for
sure.
And he didn't embarrass his government or his country. He, if anyone was to blame, if anyone was in the wrong position, he was the one who fought. And there were others too, as bad as him.
Okay.
I don't even blame Perfumo in the sense that if he wants to have an affair with someone, yes, he didn't.
No.
Very unnecessary, I suppose, the charming country's wife. But there you are, that is right. But what annoys me is that he should have brought an innocent person who had been kind to him into the limelight to the extent that someone had been sacrificed, and it was the unfortunate.
Oh, I'm so glad you talk like that.
I mean, I'm pleased to tell you what I know is true, and that is that if ever there was a scapegoat made in this country, in England, certainly Stephen heads one head to lift.
Yes.
And another, of course, is Paul Oscar Wilde.
Oh,
and
yes.
There are others. And you know, it's an extraordinary thing how some of the most talented, the most clever, most brilliant minds, the most cultured people are the ones who have to take the rap for the sins of others. And you know, the public, unfortunately, relishes the jolly good scandal. It thoroughly enjoys itself, all the time complimenting themselves that it wasn't them that it found out. You know, life sometimes, as I say to you, when we come back to your side and we enter into your world and we see the state of the world, the state of the vast majority of people's minds, I didn't say this is fair, but I must say we are very distressed, Jerry.
Oh, I hope so.
Anyway, my dear, Stephen couldn't come tonight, but I'm sure he'll come on Thursday. Actually, of course, this isn't your night, but
yeah.
I understand the reason. That's why I particularly made this effort to come tonight.
Oh,
it's been very nice speaking to you, Rose, and I'm glad to see you as well as you are, and do as we tell you. Don't overtax yourself. Try and organize your life so that you don't have too many people too often. And don't eat the wrong things. I think that's so important.
Oh, no,
I think you are a lot better. And we certainly are doing everything we can.
Oh,
I will, and by the way, your mother sends all her love and blessings, and your brother is standing beside the precious holy evening. I know he's wanting me to tell you he's here and to give you his love and blessings, and well, see you again on Thursday. Bye bye, dear. And God bless. Bye bye, my dear.
Bye bye.